Tonight on Arena, Rufus Wainwright on family, folk music and turning 50, and new albums from Queens of the Stone Age, Creepshow and Yosef up for review. #51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. Rufus Wainwright comes from a musical pedigree that is virtually unrivalled. The son of musical legends Loudon Wainwright III and Canadian folk singer and songwriter Kate McGarrigle, Rufus released his eponymous debut album 25 years ago. Now, he has never been easy to pigeonhole, one would have to say, and you wouldn't necessarily be associating with folk music the way his parents were associated with that form. His new album is, though, a deep embrace of that musical heritage. Folkocracy is the title of this 15-song collection. It includes great standards like Shenandoah, Wild Mountain Time is in there, as is Arthur McBride. But what really struck me about the album is the long list of collaborators, Brandi Carlile, Chaka Khan and the Bangles' Susanna Hoff, from them to contemporary music supremo John Legend and family members including Martha Wainwright, Anna McGarrigle and many others. I'll be talking to Rufus Wainwright in a few moments' time. But first of all, let's listen to a little bit of the album. This is a version of Neil Young's Harvest. It features the instrumental playing of Andrew Bird and Chris Stills.
Did I see you down in a young girl's town with your mother in so much pain? I was almost there at the top of the stairs with the screaming in the rain. Did she wake you up to tell you that it was only a change of plan? Dream on, let me fill your cup with the promise of a man. Did I see you walking with the boys, though it was not hand in hand? There was some black face in a lonely place when you could understand. Did she wake you up to tell you that it was only a change of plan? Dream up, let me fill your cup with the promise of a man.
Harvest there, taken from the album Folkocracy by Rufus Wainwright, released on Friday, June the 9th. I am delighted to be joined on the line from Los Angeles now by Rufus Wainwright. What a version of Harvest that is. I just love the instrumentation that you have in there, Rufus.
Yeah, no, I'm very happy with it. And actually yesterday I found out from a friend that that Neil Young really likes it. My friend is friend with Daryl Hannah, you know, who's married to Neil Young, and Daryl told her that Neil is really, really happy with the version, which is rare for him to do, apparently. I think it's a success.
Yeah, and to take on a song like Harvest, now there are 15 songs across this album, and almost every one you've taken on has got a huge amount of music history all around it. But to take on a song like Harvest, a Neil Young song like that, was that a bit nerve-wracking?
Well, look, I've sung Harvest for years, and I wouldn't say it's that challenging of a musical composition, but it's certainly such a beautiful piece of music, and I just my voice just adores singing it, so there's no challenge in that. The big challenge, of course, now that we're talking to you in Ireland, was me taking on Arthur McBride. That's the big challenge, which I'm very happy with my version. I mean, it's completely different from Paul Brady's, whose version I adore as well. But But yeah, no, I took on a few heavy hitters.
You certainly did. I'll come to the Arthur McBride in a minute, but
yes,
let me just talk
yes.
about the fact that Andrew Bird and Chris Stills are with you on Harvest. You know,
yeah.
beautiful fiddle playing in there. Is it a mandolin or a banjo? I'm not quite sure. Or maybe it's a ukulele. I'm not quite sure which
yeah.
of them it is in there. There's a bass in there. There's
yeah,
a guitar
yeah.
in there. Those are the instruments of the folk family.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, that was sort of the main objective of this album was to... whatever, promote the kind of folk philosophy, which is people just gathered around playing instruments and singing at the same time and trying to harmonize and everything done sort of in one take and very simply and very direct, which oddly enough, you know, in this day and age is quite unusual, which is funny, but it is, nonetheless, it's, yeah, so it's a good time to do it, obviously.
Yeah, but this does sound like as if you have an enormous house sitting there and loads of people came around one night and you all sat down and had a big session.
Yeah,
that's what the album feels like. I mean, I mentioned Andrew Bird and Chris Stills there. David Byrne is on there. Nicole Scherzinger is on there. Your sisters, Martha and Lucy Wainwright Roach are on there. And the list goes on. Chaka Khan is on there. I mean, the list really does go on. Is it? Did you stick pins in the people? Not, let me put this correctly. Did you drop a pin in a map of singers and they landed on the people you wanted? How did you go about choosing the songs and the singers for the album?
Well, you know, I think partially it's both you know, a kind of a perk of my career and also of living in Los Angeles. I mean, I'm very much like my parents in the sense that I'm a musician's musician. You know, I've always been very appreciated by my peers and even, you know, or certain legendary people as well. And that's that I've always prized that deeply. So I took advantage of that a bit, but also living in LA and living in Hollywood, you know, despite all the, you know, gun violence and forest fires and, you know, smog and everything, it is an amazing town in terms of, you know, calling up Chaka Khan or John Legend and just seeing what they're doing in the afternoon if they want to cut a track. It is that kind of, it's an industry town. Mm. So it's a testament to those two elements, I think.
Yeah, but let us go to Arthur McBride since you brought it up there. You didn't have to call anybody up for that, but you had to practice your piano for this one, Rufus.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I mean, there's a funny story with that where, you know, I grew up. I'm very good friends with Paul Brady, and I used to go visit him as a little kid with my dad back in the 80s and in Dublin and. And I would ask him to play Arthur McBride often, sometimes repeatedly, like two or three times, which is a hefty amount of time, just because I was so obsessed with the song. And then years later, I reconnected with it. But I was playing it for a friend of mine who was an opera singer in Vienna, and she appreciated it, but she was like, you know, Rufus, you could do your own version of this. It's kind of different and in your style. So I took up the challenge and yeah, I created a more sort of almost like Straussian version or something.
But says Arthur, I wouldn't be proud of your clothes, for you've only the land of the mass, I suppose. But you dare not change them one night, for you know, if you do, you'll be flogged in the morning. And although that we were single and free, we take great delight in our own company. We have no desire, strange places to see, although that sure offers a charm. And we have no desire to take your advance, all hazards and dangers we barter on chance. For you'd have no scruples for to send us to France, where we would get shot without warning. Oh no, says the sergeant, I'll have no such chat, and neither will I take it from snappy young brats. For if you insult me with one other word, I'll cut off your heads in the morning. And Arthur and I, and we scarce give them time for to draw their own blades, when a trusty shillelagh came over their heads and bid them don't take that as fair warning. And their rusty old rapiers and hung by their sides, we flung them as fast as we could in the tide. Now take them, their devils, cried Arthur McBride, and temper their edge in the morning. And the little wee drummer, we flattened his bow, and we made a football of his rowdy dow dow. Threw it into the tide for to rock and to roll, and bid it a tedious returning.
Yeah, we certainly, in that version of yours of Arthur McBride from the album Folkocracy there, Rufus Wainwright, we certainly do get that big piano accompaniment. Very yes. Operatic, in fact.
Yes, very operatic. It's a very operatic song. I mean, I think what I wanted to kind of illustrate, which I think is sometimes missed when you just run through it, is how violent it is. Mm. I mean, it's, you know, that whole section where they're, you know, really beating the, killing the sergeant or whatever. Mm. I mean, I'm assuming he dies. Or they leave him for dead. It's brutal, you know? So I kind of wanted to bring in sort of look at that through more of an operatic lens once it reaches that point in the song.
And that darkness is there as well in a song like Down in the Willow Garden that you hear. Yes. You have Brandy Carlisle. I mean, again, yes. When I listened to that closely, this because the songs are so sweet and some yes. of the arrangements are so beautiful around them that you give yes. us on this album, the darkness yeah. of the lyrics is extraordinary.
Yeah. No, I'm fascinated by that juxtaposition. You know, I think a lot of it is almost like, it's almost like a lot of these songs are kind of like Trojan horses, you know, they kind of come in these sweet packages but then when you actually focus on what's happening, it's pretty sinister. Mm. But you know, it's that's probably why they've lasted so long, because they can kind of, you know, they can sneak in.
Are you more at home? I don't know if this is the right way to put it, but what does it feel like in the world of opera and classical music, where you seem to be very at home and very mm-hmm. at ease with that style yeah. of music? What does yeah. that part of music give to you?
Well, you know, I mean, especially in terms of this album, I mean, the story goes that, you know, I started off in the folk tradition. And in fact, you know, I've been in pop now for many, many years, but I've never quite, you know, shall we say, mastered the genre, though I've done fairly well here and there. But that's kind of how I make my bread and butter. But recently, when I was, you know, watching the Grammys, I realized how many folk, you know, categories there are, and how there's like just like a whole plethora of acoustic kind of sections in that award show. And it just dawned on me. I was like, you know, I'm from that world. I know how to do that. That is my inheritance in a lot of ways. And I think especially now that my mother's passed and my father's an older man, you know, I'm just starting to take hold of what is rightfully mine. So that's when I decided to embark on this project, but of course, you know, I've been in the opera world now for several years, and I've always used that sensibility in my songwriting. So of course, you know, the genres start to spill into each other, and that's, I guess that's partially always been my my cup of tea or whatever. Yeah. You know. Yeah, people expect that of me.
And it's hardly surprising, since you like opera, that Schubert might be part of your yes. likes as well. And the track on the album, Nacht und Trauma. Am I hearing a choir of Rufus Wainwrights in this song?
Yeah. That's a bit of Schubert meets, you know, Brian Wilson.
Thank you.
Yes, several voices of Rufus Wainwright within that version of Nacht und Träume, but not a word of German to be heard anywhere in that, Rufus.
Yeah. No, I'm. My husband is German. He was born in Hamburg, and he's very, very particular about pronunciation. So I just don't try.
He can't give out about your...
You know how marriage is. You know, you just got to give up on certain things and embrace others. And so the German is one I had to give up on. I also speak French fluently. And yeah. French and German aren't sympathetic in terms of languages. They don't kind of relate to each other as well as, let's say, Italian or Spanish. So yeah, but German is... I love the German language, and I wish I spoke German.
Yeah, well... I like your version of Schubert with that kind of vocalese, just the vowel sounds, and you can't get into any trouble about pronunciation.
With
those. But there's such a variety of arrangements and pieces on the album. I'm thinking of Chaka Khan and Cotton Eye Joe. Yeah. Cotton Eye Joe, this is, you know, front and center an American song. Yes. But this version with Chaka Khan, I never thought I would hear the song in this way. How did it come about?
Yeah. Well, it's a total lift, shall we say, or from another version that I heard, which is it's a Nina Simone version. It's not one of her well-known versions. I mean, she's done it a few times, but this is from a live concert that she did, and I've only ever heard it once on recording, and so I kind of tracked it down. It's an homage a bit to Nina Simone as well, and it's fascinating because it is, you know, of course we did with all of these songs, I ended up doing, you know, a lot of research and stuff and really reading into, you know, what the songs mean. And Cotton Eye Joe is also very brutal. I mean, that the idea of a Cotton Eye Joe is basically someone who's either gone blind from drinking too much or venereal disease. And or they have no eyeballs and there's cotton in their eyes. So it's, but a pretty song.
Let's have a listen to what that sounds like.
Where do you come from? And where do you go? Where do you come from, Cotton Eyed Joe?
Well, I come for to see you when I come for to see you. And I come for to show you my diamond ring. I come for to show you my diamond.
Come from? Where do you go? My Cotton Eyed Joe.
So there we have a Cotton Eyed Joe version featuring Chaka Khan, and this from Folkocracy, new album from Rufus Wainwright. And Rufus will be in Dublin in July performing, I presume, songs from the album.
But well, I have to say I'm performing on July 22nd. Which is my 50th birthday.
Yeah, and I presume you chose Ireland to celebrate your birthday in, am I right?
You know, I didn't. but Ireland has a way of choosing me often for such events. Momentous occasion. So it's, you know, it's going to be a pretty amazing evening, I'm sure.
Yeah, I wondered if because I was going to link that into, in some ways, your version of Going to a Town, This Is With Anonia. This version of that song, this is where the lyrics get into this idea of, I'm so tired of you, America.
Yeah.
Do you sympathize? Do you empathize with that feel at the moment?
Well, you know, it's. I wouldn't say that at the moment it's that sentiment. I think the overarching feel is that. I mean, it's just. I think it's more the repeated, you know, abuse that we kind of experience here, where, you know, there's just such hope and then such sadness, you know, right after each other. It just gets that we get exhausted by. At the moment, though, in this week, you know, Trump's going, you know, being, you know, he's being indicted, and it does seem like the wheels of justice are moving somewhat, and so it's not a time to be, you know, bereft necessarily this week, but next week, you know, we'll be tired.
I'm going to a town that has already been burnt down. I'm going to a place that has already been disgraced. I'm gonna see some folks who have already been let down. I'm so tired of America. I'm gonna make it up for all of the Sunday time. I'm gonna make it up for all of the nursery rhymes that never really seem to want to tell the truth. I'm so tired of you, America.
One of the things about this album in particular, Rufus, is the sense of family across it. Yes, there's this big, large family of colleagues and people that you've played with and people that you want to, that you want to just sing music with. But your own family, you know, your birth family, you've mentioned your father, Loudon Waitright, a few times, your mother, Kate McGarrigle, who sadly is with us no longer.
Yes.
There's one track that really brings all of that together, a couple of them, but Wild Mountain Time, I have to say, it's the final track on the album. And I was glad it was, because if it had been sooner, I'd have to wipe myself up off the floor. It's hugely emotional to listen to.
Yeah. Well, that one especially is emotional because Chaim Tannenbaum, who's playing the banjo, is actually playing my mother's old banjo. And I've always identified my mother with that instrument, that and the piano, but the banjo, oddly enough, more just symbolically. So that was necessary. You know, there was talk at one point of going up to Canada and spending a couple of weeks up there recording with the whole family and really getting that down. I would love to do that at some point again. So there will be more folk coming at some at a certain point. But as we got closer to making the record, I realized that I actually wanted to just see it through my lens of from where I am here in California. That being said, if I hadn't have had, you know, a family moment on there, a bona fide one, it would have been weird.
It certainly would. Because, yeah, you mentioned Chaim Tannenbaum, who kind of, he was such a collaborator with your mother, Kate, and in fact,
and
with your aunt, and your dad, and with Anna McGarrigle as well. Anna is there. We hear her singing. Lily Lankin, who's a cousin of yours. Lucy Wainwright Roach, your sister, Martha. Yeah. I mean, I spoke to Martha around the time of her memoir. I remember one of the things that she spoke about was, you know, whatever childhood and sibling rivalry that may have gone on there, there was a real sense of, you know, a coming together, maybe later in life. Does music allow you that kind of coming together, or how does it allow you to do that in a way that perhaps having a chat is more problematic sometimes?
I mean, we both look, as we all know, you know, I've had ups and downs with my dad, for instance. I mean, we happen to be in a very good place right now, but it's taken a lot of energy and time and, you know, some therapy and all of that to rectify it. But certainly music was the glue that allowed it to occur, you know, or maybe I shouldn't say glue. It's more the, I'm going to be gay right now. It's more the lube. Because if it was glue, we wouldn't have moved. But it was, yes, it enables us to just force each, you know, it forces us to come together and just, you know, make, you know, concentrate on something other than, you know, what's actually maybe going on, but nonetheless, you know, celebrate.
But when Chaim Tannenbaum started to play that, your mother's banjo, I can't imagine what that was like in the room for all of you. I mean, because you were so closely, obviously attached to her. What was that moment like as you started to record the songs? Or how many takes
it's all
did it?
Great. I mean, I was kind of exhausted, and you can actually hear it a bit in my voice at that point because I'd done a show the night before, so I was ready to kind of to take, you know, the back seat, which I do actually, because I, everybody gets a verse and Martha ends the song and stuff. So I feel it was very much, it was, for me, it was a sense of relief to be able to lean back and just let my family do their magic, and it's certainly very emotional, but more comforting than sad.
Well, that is nice to hear, and I'm sure our listeners will enjoy listening to it right now. Wild Mountain Thyme, the version that is on Folkocracy, new album from Rufus Wainwright. And I presume it will mostly be songs from the album that we'll hear in the National Concert Hall on July the 22nd.
Mostly it'll be songs from here, though. There is a mystery record that we sell on tour. We just sell it at shows. It's called Road Trip Elegies. It's an amazing album of all different types of songs, and we'll be singing a lot from that as well. And you can only purchase that album at the show.
So what a tease you are.
I know. Well, you know, it's a tough business.
Rufus, lovely to have spoken with you this evening, and look forward to your visit to Ireland on July the 22nd. And happy birthday ahead of time for that. Enjoy the night in Dublin then.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, Rufus. That's Rufus Wainwright. And we'll finish up with Wild Mountain Thyme, final track on the album, Folkocracy.
Oh, the summertime has come, and the trees are sweetly blooming, and the wild mountain all the colors are perfuming. Will you go? Let's see, go.
Beautiful version that is of Wild Mountain Thyme, and the album really is a joy, Folkocracy by Rufus Wainwright. What a joy he is to talk to chat with as well. Great performer all round. Yes, the Folkocracy, the name of the album, and July the 22nd is the date to put in your diaries for his performance at the National Concert Hall, as he told us, his 50th birthday. He will be celebrating here in Ireland on that night as well. Now, festival season is upon us. We're on the road. First stop for Arena is a suite of programmes from the Galway International Arts Festival. Festival runs from the 17th through to the 30th of July this year. Arena will broadcast two shows from there in the first week of the festival, July the 20th and 22nd. Now, in the second week of the festival, however, we're going back down to Galway. Thursday, July the 27th, an audience with Druid Theatre. And this is all in conjunction with their Druid O'Casey. You're invited to come along to this audience with Druid, by the way. They'll be talking in Druid O'Casey. The three plays of Sean O'Casey's Dublin trilogy will be performed. That's The Plough and the Stars, The Shadow of a Gunman and Juno and the Peacock. And on Thursday, July the 27th at 3 p.m. in the Town Hall Theatre in Galway, we will be joined by the creative team behind Druid O'Casey, including director Gary Hines, cast of the three plays, including Catherine Walsh, Marty Ray, Rory Nolan, Hilda Fay and Zara Devlin. A chat to the cast, the director, the creative team about the whole process of bringing Druid O'Casey to the stage and indeed the importance of O'Casey's work and the play's contemporary resonances, which are many, I would think we will be told on the night. Real opportunity this then to whet your appetite if you're lucky enough to have tickets for the shows in Galway, or equally an opportunity to explore the themes and theatricality of these much-loved works of arts. Special Arena Druid O'Casey from the Town Hall Theatre in Galway, Thursday, July the 27th from 3 through until 4 p.m. To book your ticket, go to druid.ie. And so to our album reviews on this Friday evening. First up, we'll, after grooving it up for their latest album, the Mark Ronson-produced Villains, Queens of the Stone Age are back to where they are happiest, the brutality of life. And this is with the album In Time's New Roman. Then we have Canadian band Creepshow. Their follow-up to Mr. Dynamite is an album called Yawning Abyss. Dangerous title, that, I would have thought. And Joseph Cat Stevens brings us King of a Land. Some 56 years, can you believe it, after his debut, Matthew and Son. 53 years after T for Tillamon. Let's stop with that mathematics or we'll all get depressed. Nadine O'Regan and Simon Marr have been listening and they're with me in studio this evening. Let's start with the American rock band Queen of the Stone Age. 7 years since they released Villains, seem to be back to their darkest, with lead singer Josh Homme saying in about Time's New Roman, "It is something that sounds as brutal as it feels to be alive right now." Cheery stuff, Nadine, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, in fairness to him, he's had a pretty rough time. He's been through a cancer battle. He has had an extremely acrimonious separation from his ex, Brody Dahl, of Distillers fame. And he's even, like, she has had a restraining order against him, and then he's had a counter restraining order against her, and their three children have been caught in the middle of that. And then, of course, there was COVID. So to say he's had a tough time, yes, yeah, he has had a tough time.
All right, let's have a listen to a track just to see what all that toughness sounds like. Paper Machete. Paper Machete, the title of that track from Queen of the Stone Age and In Time's New Roman. And Simon, that kind of brings you right back to the early days of Queens of the Stone
absolutely.
Age. They're back to basics here, really, aren't they?
Oh yeah, we're
musically
back to,
anyway.
We're back to Songs for the Deaf. So we're going back to 20 years at least on this. And it's always been a thing that Queens of the Stone Age only work, whether that's as a unit or as a group that produces records, when there's something to sing about. Because when they released Villains and they brought in Mark Ronson, superstar producer, and a bunch of collaborators, but it just didn't work because it just sounded like a really nicely produced load of nothing. Whereas this time, you know, as Nadine has set out, the stuff that has happened over the number of years has given that all of that material, and it's as if that energy then ends up on the record.
pain gives great art, it would seem, according to Simon, Nadine.
Yeah, but I mean, I would really take Simon's point about them going back to that era of sort of Songs for the Deaf around 2002, because that album was so strong, like tracks like No One Knows. I saw them live around that period and they were thrilling, and they are an incredibly, I mean, actually my notes for when I was writing down notes for this particular album, I just wrote like riffs, sexy riffs. There's a lot of great riffs, and you can feel the propulsion, the swagger, the confidence.
But is there any nuance in all of that? Are they varying things in any way?
Yeah, I think they're not afraid to change it up. So they're very unafraid of stopping a song short in the middle of the song, adding in an orchestral element. They really believe, I think, in the album, as opposed to a collection of singles. And that's one of the things I really like about Queens of the Stone Age. They play with your ears. They will literally move, you know, from mono into stereo in the space of like a couple of beats. So if you're listening on headphones, it can vary as well. Yeah. I love that about it. Yeah, well, it's a self-produced record, actually. Yeah. And, you know, Josh Homme is all over it in terms of it being his vision. I mean, he's the only member of the group that has been there since the founding of the band. And this feels very much that it has his imprint on it everywhere.
Okay, initially on Sicily, you think, oh, we're in a quiet place. Don't be fooled. They kind of lull you into a false sense of security for about a minute there, and then whack, and it builds from there. Sicily, that's Sicily is the song from Queens of the Stone Age and the new album In Times New Roman. A lot of difficulty in his personal life here, Josh Homme. Has that fed into the album as you give us your final stars?
Oh, it absolutely has. And it has, in a bizarre way, it has inspired what has come out on it. And when it works, this album works really, really well. But occasionally, and I think like every Queens of the Stone Age album, there are moments where it disappears off into itself. And there's one track on it, Straight Jacket Fitting, which I think
the
is
nearly... The 9 minute.
Yeah, it's nearly, yeah. Yeah, it's nearly 10 minutes long. And it's like, ah, no, stop. Because you know that they're capable, and Josh Homme in particular is capable of 3 and 4 minutes of absolute rock majesty. So there's no need for the filler.
Well, it is 9 minutes at the very end, so you know, you can stop if you want.
Exactly, it's time.
Stars.
But it's time for the kettle to boil, and you'll have the tea made by the time the song's finished. So I'm going to give it 3.5.
3.5. What are you saying, Nadine? I think you might have liked the 9 minutes, did you?
I liked it. I mean, I would go with 4 for this, but I don't think it is quite there with Songs for the Deaf, but it is close. You know, it's a very good album.
High quality Queens of the Stone.
Yeah, I think people are really going to enjoy it live, and they're playing the Three Arena in November. I think it'll be brilliant.
Okay. In Times New Roman, the title of the Queens of the Stone Age album. Two more to go, Cat Stevens and Creepshow, back shortly with those. All right, let's continue with the album reviews then. And if you're looking for a walk back into the light after Queens of the Stone Age, not going to get it from Yawning Abyss, the new album from Canada's Creepshow. This is and I suppose if you think about past work like Mr. Dynamite, you're certainly going to be in the world of nihilism in this particular band, Simon.
Yeah, I think you most certainly are. So this is John Grant and Wrangler, and they came together 5 years ago and they recorded an album, and it's as if it's all of the various bits of the inner corners of their mind, you know, mixed with a room full of synthesizers, and they made an awful lot of noise the first time around. This time there's marginally less noise, but it's still as weird as it gets.
All right, let's listen to a track called Money Back.
You wanna yell like a kick from the cannon. You thought the private BLS would expand. I don't believe that any more than you do. I don't know anyone as dirty as you. You want your money back? I didn't think so. You want your money back? I didn't think so. You want your money back? I didn't think so.
Now give me five, no baby, too slow.
You want your money back?
I didn't think so.
You want your money back?
I didn't think so.
You want your money back?
I didn't think so. Now give me five, no baby, too slow.
Pennies, pounds, dollar bills, signed agreements, death wills, appreciation monetary, big green cryptocurrency.
Money Back, the title of that track, with John Grant, well, with Creepshow, John Grant, and who's the other head involved? You tell
me.
Nadine, it just grabs you immediately, you have
that
to admit.
That track does. It's kind of glitchy, it's catchy, and it's got that sort of sing-along refrain where you can imagine people in the schoolyard going, "You want Money Back?"
I was waiting for them to say at some point, "Where's me jumper?" I really thought it was on the way in there. Yeah, it has that feel of it.
That's the second track in, and the album starts, in fairness, very promisingly, for me at least, with that track. And then the third track is the title track, which is also excellent. And it's kind of warm, colourful, loads of synths, and John Grant sounds great on it. It actually just sounds straightforwardly like a John Grant track. But the rest of it to me sounds a bit undercooked. It just sounds like a collection of ideas thrown around by talented musicians, and then they headed off to, you know, they did some work in England, they did some work in Iceland. I mean, there's an Icelandic band called Gus Gus, which I think, you know, like this album sounds like a much weaker version of what Gus Gus do. Mm. And John Grant, what John Grant himself does, like, you know, if you want to listen to him do synths really well, go listen to Pale Green Ghosts and some of the tracks on that. He has a beautiful vocal, he's an extraordinary man and an incredible artist, but here I just found that it was a little bit anonymous sounding, if I'm honest.
I love when there's a difference of opinion in the studio.
Yes.
Simon Marr.
Yeah, no, there's something about it, and I think there's kind of a fine line to be drawn, because I think you're completely right, is that John Grant's vocal and everything is always very good and it's incredibly pure, one of the best vocalists that there are, but you have to allow weird into the room sometimes, you know, and I think on this album weird is definitely allowed into the room, but I think to really, really good effect. You know, I think there's just times in this where you're listening, and not even just the music nerd in me, but just sort of when you're listening to it and kind of going, oh, that's just really, really good. I just really, really like that.
But did you not find that it was a bit monotoned? Because like for me, they kept trying to make everything sound really ominous. And I was like, okay, I get you. It sounds ominous. And then the next track was like, oh, that sounds ominous too.
I think ominous is their thing, and they will be featured in Icelandic dramas that you'll only see on BBC4 down the line. But I think that's not necessarily a bad thing either.
Well, yeah, if you give your album the title Yawning Abyss, it isn't The Sun Is Rising.
It is not.
It certainly is that. Not that. Let's have a listen to the title track.
Signs like factory tile, which is in South Bend, Indiana, but it doesn't rotate anymore. We drove along.
Already calling for a steward's inquiry, Nadine.
I was just making the point that
those two snippets are
the best snippets on the record.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, you got to help them along, don't you? Poor old Creepshow, they need all the help they can get. That is track three, the title track, Yawning Abyss. And you did say, Nadine, to be fair, that the opening tracks are where it's at, but that it gets a bit tedious later on. Do you not think I know there's a sameness, but is there not enough variety even further down the playlist?
Well, it was 41 minutes long, and for me, it felt as though it was much longer.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I hear you on that one, okay. Simon?
No, I didn't tire of it. I was surprised that I didn't tire of it. And I love the way that it wraps up. You talked earlier on about Queens of Stone Age and the fact that it's done as an album. I like the fact that this album went in a circle. It took you from the start, and when you get down to that Bella surprise at the end, I just think this is a very, very nicely put together thing. I would say take the dog, take your headphones, take the 41 minutes of it and you will enjoy this.
Okay, so I felt like you'd be at Electric Picnic, right, and it'd be 4 a.m. and, you know, you'd have left your brain at some part in the field, you know, and you'd be listening to this and it would suddenly all make sense to you because it's so spare and skeletal. But in an ordinary world, you know, there's just not enough here.
We don't live in an ordinary world. This is music. And this is where it's allowed be. I honestly think this is allowed be the way it is. And no, I think it's an album that will grow on and you'll hear a track from it somewhere at the end of the line in 3 or 4 years' time and you kind of go, oh yeah, I remember that. That's Creepshow.
I'm going to say this to you in 3 or 4 years.
Okay, I'm back in the room now.
Sorry, Sean.
Yeah, I'm back in the room now. That was a wonderful conversation and I don't know who I'm going to agree with on it. I may have to come back to both of you in 3 or 4 years' time and see what I think. Right, stars from you on this one, Nadine.
John Grant's amazing. There are amazing musicians on it. Unfortunately, it's a two.
A two from Nadine.
Oh, I am going to give this 4 stars.
4 stars. Is that the real world or some
nope,
other world?
No, it's an actual four. Actual
a real world four stars.
World four
okay.
Stars.
Let us, that's Creepshow and the new album, Yawning Abyss. Let's move on then to King of a Land. It's been a decade in the writing, seemingly, by singer-songwriter Yosef, or as most of us call him, of course, Cat Stevens. Career began almost 6 decades ago with the success of Matthew and Son, 1967. T for Tillamon, 1970. Teaser and Firecat 1 year later, 1977. Stevens converted to Islam, adopted the name Yusuf Islam. He's back with an album now called King of the Land. 17th studio album, Nadine. I don't know what to expect from Yusuf / Cat Stevens at this point in time.
I wasn't sure either. And the album is sort of remarkable in how simple it is at some levels. You know, the thing about Cat Stevens is, if you have a great vocal, if you have a way with melody, and if you understand what parts of a song you can leave out and then benefit the song, you're going to go a long way. And he has, you know, he's already world famous and has been since the, what, 60s when he released his first album. And now, even though parts of this album are a little hokey, a little earnest, there's still some lovely moments.
All right, let's have a listen to Take the World Apart.
I'll take the world apart to find a place for a peaceful heart. I know I've got to find it, although I break down the walls of China. I shake the world around until my little mellow home is found. I look till I find my beauty, I would jump right over Mount Fuji. La 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 la.
I defy you not to sing along to Take the World Apart from Yosef Cat Stevens. There's a naivety in there. Is it an endearing naivety, or is it, do you get annoyed at the naivety, Simon?
Here's the thing, is that the album is a lot of simple stories all about a little boy who was going to be king and he was going to get to make all of these decisions. And it's great and it's dreamlike and it's hopeful and all that sort of stuff. What happened with Yusuf Cat Stevens was that at some point, when I suppose more of the religious influence came in, is that it added a certainty to things. And I'm not sure that the certainty fits with the awe and wonder of a little boy, you know, and I'm not sure that there's really a place for certainty in the life of a little boy. So I think sometimes some of the songs move from being like lovely little tales to maybe sounding just a little bit sort of preachy and directive. And I think that has an effect on it. But just melodically and sonically, it just sounds, it's all so lovely that it's hard to give out to him.
Yeah.
Really.
And when I saw a track like Pagan Run in the midst of all of this, I wondered, was I going to be preached at? Do we get any kind of religious dogma coming towards us?
Yeah, Pagan Run would be an example where he says, God showed me where to go. And then there's the track Son of Mary, which he has the line, Mary, Mary, don't you weep, heaven guards him while you sleep. And it's all probably a little bit off-putting for people who wouldn't have the same attitude towards religion or spirituality that he has, because as Simon is mentioning, it is a little bit didactic, or, you know, very much coming from a particular worldview, which some people will definitely balk at. But for me, mostly I tried to tune out the lyrics, and the vision that came to mind when I was listening to this album was that of an elf skipping through the forest, plucking a lyre. And
all right, and I'm presumably asking the pagans to run away while he does it in this track.
I was on the pagan run, on a superstitious road, looking for a day to come to park my restless soul. I was lost and in a mess, too proud to beg about. And though I'd never admit it, I was scared as hell.
And I suppose that's one of the tracks. That's Pagan Run from Yosef and the new album, King of a Land. That's one of the tracks that has a more kind of electric feel to it, and a more filled out version. There's lots of lyre plucking and skipping through the forest, as Nadine put it. What are you saying overall? And there, stars, Simon?
He does it very well. In fairness, more than most, he really does that very well. It's not always going to be my cup of tea, but it's something that on a given day with a given mood, you can't help but smile a lot of the time through this album. So I'm going to give him three.
Three. What are you saying, Nadine?
Make yourself some herbal tea. Sit back, enjoy. It's a three.
That's okay. Three with herbal tea is the recommendation for Cat Stevens, Yosef and King of a Land. Previously, we spoke about Yawning Abyss, Creepshow, In Times Roman and Queens of the Stone Age. Nadine O'Regan and Simon Marr are reviewers on this Friday evening. And that's it for this week here on Arena. Leah Murphy and Paula Shields researched. Ruth Kennington was on sound this evening. Stephen Higgins was the broadcast coordinator. And tonight's programme was produced by Keshi. I'm going to play Rufus Wainwright in full on the programme on Lyric on Sunday afternoon, him singing his Schubert. It's beautiful. So join me for that in the meantime. And I'll be back here, of course, on Monday as usual. John Creedon will be with you after the news.